This is Wendy Halley, and you're listening to Lucid Cafe. Welcome back. Well, this episode is jam-packed with incredible information I'm excited to share with you, so let's get right to it. I had the good fortune to speak with Martin Lee, a longtime journalist who is the co-founder and director of Project CBD, which is a California-based nonprofit dedicated to promoting and publicizing research into the medical uses of CBD and other components of the cannabis plant. Martin is the author of several books, including Smoke Signals, A Social History of Marijuana, Medical, Recreational, and Scientific, which received the American Botanical Council's James A. Duke Award for Excellence in Botanical Literature. Named by High Times as one of the 100 most influential people in cannabis, he is the 2016 winner of the Emerald Cups Lifetime Achievement Award. Did not know that was a thing, but good job, Martin. He's also the co-founder of the media watch group FAIR, which stands for Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, and is the author of Acid Dreams, The Complete Social History of LSD, The CIA, The 60s, and Beyond. In this episode, we focus primarily on Martin's involvement with the recently released book, The Essential Guide to CBD, which is a reliable, easy-to-understand primer written by the editors of Reader's Digest and the experts at Project CBD. Please enjoy my crazy informative conversation with Martin Lee. Martin, thank you so much for coming on the show.
It's my pleasure.
I am curious about your involvement in this book. It's the Reader's Digest, Essential Guide to CBD. How did you get involved with this particular publication?
Well, Reader's Digest approached Project CBD, which is a nonprofit that I've been working with for the past 10 years. I was a co-founder and now the director. And we have a pretty extensive archive about CBD. We were really the first website, the first educational group to focus on cannabidiol within the context of medical cannabis, actually. It's sort of shifted now. It's kind of become its own thing in some ways. But I think because of that, they were, you know, CBD became really hot by 2018 or so. It had emerged as this mega global phenomenon, and Reader's Digest was interested. We were approached by them, and I have to admit, I was very hesitant initially for a number of reasons. One is I was afraid of the workload. We already are pretty stretched thin, and I couldn't see how we'd fit in a book into that schedule. I've written several books, and you know, I know it takes a lot. But we talked it through, and they assured me that they would be bringing a writer on to work with the content already on projectcbd.org, and that sounded pretty good. Although, you know, it's not that it's overly technical, the content, but you need a pretty good grounding in medical science, I think, to really be able to write about it. But the one condition I insisted on in our early discussions before we decide to partner on this effort was that the book would not diss THC. That is not going to be an anti-THC book. That's not what we're about. We're about the whole plant, including THC and CBD and all the other components. And we don't privilege one over the other, even though our name, Project CBD, reflects a particular interest in that one cannabinoid. And there's reasons for that going back, you know, 10 years ago at a time when within the medical cannabis world, it was all THC. There was no discussion or really no knowledge about CBD. So, and they agreed to that. And we gave it a go. I think initially they had very unrealistic expectations about how quickly they could get the book done. But then COVID hit and then the schedule went kablooey. And it came together actually pretty nicely. There was a lot of back and forth. They hired a really good writer, Celine Yeager, who did a really nice job with it and made it very accessible. And I'm pleased with how it came out. So I think it's going to be a good tool for education.
Yeah, it's a really well put together book. It's very clear, and there are pictures.
Well, Reader's Digest has a way of doing it. The other ironic thing about this is Reader's Digest in past years has been very much I don't want to say at the forefront of the drug war, but certainly a booster of it. Going back to the Ronald Reagan years and at a time when, Just Say No was the thing. So Reader's Digest has come a long way in that regard. And the fact that they agreed to do a book that is going to be pro-cannabis, not just pro-CBD, I think it speaks well of them and their ability to sort of move on and evolve, as we all should be able to do that.
Yeah, I'll drink to that. I was actually really surprised to see that Reader's Digest had put this out because I've always considered them a more conservative publication or publisher.
I think in some ways that very fact that they brought off the book is emblematic of the pro-cannabis cultural shift that's been happening. Cannabis has become quite mainstream, and it's fortunately not fully legal yet, but we're moving in that direction and by leaps and bounds, it seems, and who knows what the future will be. But I think it's indicative of the fact that the country has changed, society has changed, the world has changed. And I think actually CBD has a lot to do with those shifting perceptions. It's very difficult to have a prohibitionist attitude toward a compound that, number one, doesn't get you high, that has lots of health benefits. What's the issue? Why should that be illegal? And actually, that was one of the thoughts very early on when we embraced CBD in Northern California, that this could be an important tool to liberate cannabis from the drug abuse paradigm, that CBD would be a very difficult pill for the drug war establishment to swallow because of the very things I just mentioned, not intoxicating. But this whole non-intoxicating thing, it can overemphasize that because we get not infrequently emails from people. We hear from a lot of people around the world who say they take a CBD product without THC and they got high. What's the deal? And we hear this enough, even though it's the exception, not the rule, to not dismiss it as just somebody's fantasy or paranoia. People metabolize drugs in different ways and different associations you have. But I don't think that's the key thing about CBD, the fact that it doesn't get you high. I think the key thing is it's part of a plant, and in the plant can have a different profile of these so-called cannabinoids, these compounds unique to cannabis, and different amounts of THC and different amounts of CBD and other components. And that's where the magic is in the relationship between these things. And yes, there are forms of cannabis that are CBD dominant that really aren't intoxicating, certainly not to most people. And I think when CBD really pierced the national consciousness, it was back in the summer of 2013 when Sanjay Gupta apologized to the American public on CNN for misleading them about cannabis. And it was all about CBD, and people were hearing about this CBD thing for the first time. But it wasn't just hearing about it. They were seeing that it was helping these terribly ill children, and it wasn't making them high, and they didn't have to smoke it. And it was that combination of factors, like, what? It doesn't get you high, and you don't have to smoke it, but it'll help you therapeutically. There was already kind of a buzz about marijuana, as many still call it, that there's something going on there. It does seem to help people with anxiety, with nausea, so forth and so on. That was already a meme within the culture. And when CBD came along, it sort of blew everything wide open because it challenged people's perception. Going back to the days of Reefer Madness, and marijuana was portrayed as the assassin of youth. And then on CNN, people are watching a film showing how it's not killing these kids, it's saving their life. And they don't have to smoke it. So it really was like, whoa, America did a double take and the world did a double take, and CBD had so much to do with it.
That's fascinating. So Project CBD then, was this organization at the forefront of this movement?
The small nucleus of journalists and others who were working with us at the time, this 2009, 2010, We were responsible for literally introducing it into the medical cannabis community in two ways, both educating about it, talking about it, telling doctors and patients about it, because as journalists, we were going to science conferences where this was being discussed, this cannabidiol and what it did to the brains of mice. We were hearing all about it and our jaw was dropping. I mean, these were conferences, mainly it was the group, the International Cannabinoid Research Society. We're talking about, this is not hippies, we're talking about Nobel laureates who present at these conferences, several hundred scientists from around the world presenting their research that have something to do with the cannabinoid system, our internal marijuana, if you will. You know, and it's fascinating. And that's what really, that's where I first heard about CBD. And what we thought was, gee, what a pity it is that in California, where medical marijuana was already, you know, having pretty significant roots and success, but that wasn't part of it. It was all about THC. It was about getting high. Nothing wrong with that. But when we heard about CBD, it was like, it's too bad, you know, that this isn't part of what we have in California. Wouldn't it be great if we had some of these plants that are CBD rich, is the phrase we used. And lo and behold, when the first analytical labs were emerging to service the medical cannabis community by, you know, measuring the content of the THC in the different strains, the different varietals, so that in the dispensaries they can put a number on it. The presumption being the higher the number for THC, the better, which is really not always the case at all. So these labs started out to service the community, but they were not privy to information about CBD. We informed them about this. And lo and behold, you know, one out of every 1,000 strains tested, it would be a little spike for where the chromatogram would show presence of CBD. So we knew that, oh, well, that's a strain that has some CBD. That's if all the strains are brown-eyed, that was the blue-eyed strain that popped up, you know, from all the promiscuous hybridization and that was going on with these different strains being bred together. Lo and behold, the recessive CBD gene sort of popped out in a few times. So we gathered these plants, cloned them out, never sold them, and gave away literally thousands of CBD-rich plants to anybody who was interested in Northern California, whether it was patients, sometimes even doctors, but more often than not, growers and dispensaries, and said, here, we have to see if this stuff is going to do what it did to the mice. And if it does, anything like it, if it has any impact, the CBD plants, like what we were hearing about with the animal experiments, we knew this was going to be a really big deal in terms of, just simply in terms of healing possibilities. And it would be a great benefit, we thought, for the medical cannabis community, which was then under a great deal of pressure. It was the early Obama years, and he was no profile in courage when it came to marijuana early on. I think it was probably he was sort of compensating for his own use and didn't want to appear soft on drugs. The Obama administration improved later on in terms of, you know, kind of easing up a bit. But at that time, when CBD was rediscovered in Northern California, we were under a lot of pressure, raids constantly, and you know, letters going to from law enforcement going to dispensaries saying they had to shut down. Both federal and state were putting a lot of pressure on law enforcement in California. There's this image of California of everything was going groovy there, when actually local police sometimes were pretty vicious, depending what the locality was. Not so much in San Francisco, but out in the red county state, you know, the red counties of California, the rural counties that didn't vote for the measure to legalize for therapeutic use. There was a lot of pushback from law enforcement. It was really tough for a while. And we thought that CBD could be almost like a vaccine or a prophylactic. This is could help the community deal with these law enforcement attacks. Why are you busting this plant that, again, it's helping these kids with epilepsy, and they're not, you know, no one's getting intoxicated. So, you know, what are you doing? And I think it did have an effect in that way, and a lot of momentum was built from there.
So this is really not that long ago.
It's not that long ago when you think about it.
You've come a long way in a short period of time.
It's been about 10 years, a little bit more, in terms of our involvement specifically. And it's gone through certain phases. But again, by the time 2018 hit, And this is before the passage of the Farm Bill in December of 2018, which legalized the growing of hemp. And the impetus for that really was CBD more than anything else, even though, frankly, hemp is not necessarily the best form of cannabis to grow CBD for. But nonetheless, it certainly was a huge catalyst for legalizing the growing of hemp. And I would think more than any other single factor, it's why hemp is legal to grow in the United States again, as it always should have been. So we should credit a pretty powerful molecule that it could change federal law. And that's what it ended up doing. You know, by that time, there was already a huge, huge interest. That was the very end of 2018. That was the culmination of a great, massive embrace of products that were, frankly, unregulated and available, but not legal yet. And it was that interest that was really sort of pushed the federal government to respond. But unfortunately, the legal status of CBD is still a little bit hazy because of the FDA has been dragging its feet. But here it is, for better or worse. We never expected it would be, this huge commercial thing, but we did expect it would have an impact.
Right. I mean, it is kind of crazy because to have such a paradigm shift in such a short period of time about a plant that's been demonized for so long, and now you can go in the grocery store and there are CBD products there.
And gas stations and so forth.
Yeah, exactly.
It is important to note, though, that pro-cannabis cultural shift was already happening when CBD hit the scene. And it was like CBD catalyzed it and accelerated something that was already going on in the culture. It didn't create it out of whole cloth, but it's been a huge factor.
Right. So what is your hope? What would you like people to know about CBD?
Well, I would like inexpensive, good quality CBD products in various forms to be available to people so that they can have it as part of their health regimen. I mean, CBD is a fad, but it's not just a fad. Cannabis has been around and used medically for about 5,000 years, as far as we know. So it's not like all of a sudden it's just this new thing. So I think it's going to stay with us. It's not going to be just a flash in the pan. But I think that it has potential not only to help people heal on an individual level, but I think also it can be an important factor in terms of the social dimensions of healing, which I think are important. There's that phrase about takes a village to raise a child. I think it takes a village to heal someone too, in a way. And I think one of the really positive things about the medical marijuana experience early on in California was the emphasis on the social aspect of cannabis as a healing plant, that it wasn't just something you sat in your living room, you did on your own. No, you went to a dispensary where all these other people with AIDS were also there, and they were laughing and smoking and having a good time and seeing people for the last time before they died. But the social component of it, getting people out of the house into a place where they can be with other people, share stories, share information, was really, really important. And I think that dimension of cannabis as in terms of social healing, it's threatened somewhat by the commercialization we're seeing now and the legalization that's happening in various states, and that it's now become a stock market thing. And what people don't realize about cannabis, one thing that made it so compelling, it's not just people like it and how that felt, it's because you were in a circle of people passing a joint and you're meeting people the first. It's a community building botanical. And that's a very important part of the healing aspect of it. I think I've sort of diverged from your question a bit, but I would like to see CBD really integrated into society in a way that reflects the fact that it does tap into how we function biologically as human beings on a very deep level, and that it's not just any old supplement. It's a very, very special supplement, if you will. And it actually, scientists understand how and why it works, and it can help people in a lot of different ways. And that's to see that accepted and integrated into the culture would be a great thing. But I think the way it's gone, it's such a powerful commercial trajectory right now. It's almost, to me, it feels like sometimes when you heal, you have to go through a healing crisis. You get rid of toxins, your skin breaks out, you know, whatever. And that's part of healing. And I think this mad commercialization we're seeing around CBD is sort of that. The culture is sort of, it's the pus coming out of the culture. I'm not putting down, you know, products or selling CBD, and, you know, I have friends in the CBD industry and so forth. But I do think the phenomenon has been really kind of strange in that way, particularly for us, you know, when we were toiling in the wilderness there for 10 years before all this happened. So
you're saying that it's kind of like a reflection of culturally how we handle things or how we embrace things. We embrace it in this very big commercial kind of way, trendy way, and sort of take the soul out of it.
I think it's magnified sort of a sickness in the culture that expresses itself as a sort of a crass commercialization that, and again, I'm not down on people buying and selling things that are important to them. That's not the point here, but there's different ways of doing it. And it doesn't, the obvious way is companies go on the stock market, maybe cut this and that, and that's what's been happening. My preference is that CBD and hemp and cannabis would be integrated as part of a Green New Deal. And that would be seen as something that would revivify the economy and the ecology. You know, hemp as a plant is a very, very special plant in that regard. It can have a lot of positive ecological benefits, capturing carbon and so forth and so on. So when we talk about the plants that you grow to extract CBD, it's an agricultural effort. And we know agriculture unfortunately, in the United States, the way it's practiced has contributed a lot to global warming and the crises we face now. So I would like to see CBD and cannabis being part of an effort to upend those practices and to put things in a better trajectory.
Yeah, we have an unfortunate relationship. I would say we don't have a relationship with the natural world in our culture, which would translate as us not having a relationship with the cannabis plant.
You know, it's interesting because growing cannabis, which is legal to do in California.
And here too in Vermont, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what the plant limits are. I think here it's 6. If you live in a rural residential place like we do, we can grow 6 plants legally. It's a really nice plant to grow. It's a really special plant. It grows quickly. It has a real strong odor. It's sticky. It's something to interact with. It's almost like a therapeutic quality to growing cannabis, and that could be CBD-rich cannabis, or people think of it as hemp. But for me, any high-resin, sticky cannabis plant, that's really what marijuana is. It's been mislabeled as hemp for CBD, but that's another matter. So yeah, it's. I think for some people, growing cannabis plants is sort of open the door to being more respectful and knowledgeable and appreciative of other plants, of other herbs. I've seen that happen in many cases. And I think that's great, you know.
A different kind of gateway.
A different kind
experience.
Of gateway. Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit more about why CBD is so complementary to our systems, our biological systems, mm-hmm. For healing.
That's something that we talk about in the book, and I think it's done well in terms of the clarity of it. There's a quote from Andrew Taylor Still, who was the founder of osteopathy, going back to the late 1800s. He says, man should study and use the drugs compounded in his own body. And what CBD does, it activates exactly what Still was talking about. It activates compounds in our own brain and body that are, you know, available 24/7, but sometimes depleted, sometimes not there enough, and we can get sick as a result. Well, what CBD does is elevate what's referred to as endocannabinoids, endogenous cannabinoids. Cannabinoids are these compounds in the cannabis plant. When scientists were trying to figure out how these compounds affected the brain, they ended up discovering what scientists now refer to as the endocannabinoid system, the endogenous cannabinoid system. It's not like we have marijuana in our brains, but we do have endogenous compounds that have similar effects, milder, but similar. And there are receptors in the brain that respond specifically to these endogenous compounds. And what CBD does, well, I'll illustrate it by explaining first what THC does. What THC does, THC is tetrahydrocannabinol. It's the high causer. It's the and it also has a lot of medicinal properties. But it's the compound that gets you high. And the way it does that, THC binds to receptors in the brain. They're called cannabinoid receptors, CB1 receptors. And when THC, if it's in sufficient quantities, does that, you feel high. You feel a little stoned. You feel like a little swimmy-headed and, you know, mellow or whatever. Usually, other people might feel anxious or paranoid. But that's what makes it happen. CBD doesn't do that to the brain. It doesn't bind to those receptors in that way. What it does is delays the life cycle of our natural endogenous cannabinoids so that they stick around longer. Cannabinoids are oily compounds. They're lipids. You know, if you touch a cannabis plant, the bud, it's all sticky. You know, it's oily. So how do these compounds work in a body where the blood is mainly water, right? That we're mainly water, and yet these are oily compounds. How do they get to where they need to go to do what they're supposed to do? How do these endocannabinoids find their way to a receptor so they can bind to it and then causes the cell to signal in a certain way and something happens, like you feel less pain or you feel more relaxed or whatever it might be doing. So what CBD does, it actually interferes with the transport mechanism. There are actual transport molecules that they're called fatty acid binding proteins. And these fatty acids, these oily cannabinoids, they hop aboard these fatty acid binding proteins. You think of it like a little canoe or something, and it takes them where they need to go. So it goes to the specific parts of the brain or whatever. What CBD does, it kind of muscles its way forward and displaces our endogenous cannabinoids from that canoe. It kind of has first priority. So the CBD and also THC does this to a lesser extent. Basically, it gets the ride. It goes on the canoe and it goes to where it's going to go. And that's an interesting story in and of itself. But in so doing, it results in our own endogenous cannabinoids, our marijuana-like compounds, hanging around longer by the brain. So it's interacting with our receptors longer. So basically, it sort of upgrades or enhances our endocannabinoid tone. That's how scientists refer to it. When people are depleted in terms of their endocannabinoid tone as a result of chronic stress, would be an example, you become more vulnerable to getting sick. And there's different relationships for low endocannabinoid tone and a whole host of diseases that scientists have been able to document, everything from PTSD to multiple sclerosis and all sorts of diseases. Well, if you take CBD, you're basically boosting your own endocannabinoid levels so they are able to perform their function for a longer time. And that's quite amazing because the endocannabinoid system, it turns out, regulates every physiological process in the human body. And that might sound like an outlandish statement, but that is something that's well documented now. That is not a controversial statement in science. It's understood, you know, whatever it is, if it's blood pressure or blood sugar metabolism or, you know, experience of pain, you name it, any physiological process, the endocannabinoid system is regulating that, so to basically confer homeostasis and balance in the body. For example, if you have an infection and you need a fever to fight off that infection, the endocannabinoid system sort of steps out of the way, which the endocannabinoid system is very much involved with the immune system regulating it, allows the immune system to do its thing, fight the infection off. But then what the endocannabinoid system does is then turn down that immune system, so it comes back to normal when it's no longer needed to have a specific response to an acute infection. The problem is, if you have an autoimmune illness, if your immune system is overactivated inappropriately, cannabis, in particular CBD, but also THC, has this amazing way of dialing back an overactive immune system, so it can provide relief for, you know, all manner of different autoimmune diseases, and there's hundreds of them, because it has this way of regulating the immune system. That's one example, but this has been well documented for many, many different conditions that the endocannabinoid system is involved in this way. And it really is why medical marijuana is helpful for so many different conditions, because it kind of primes our endocannabinoid system.
So the marriage of THC and CBD, do you feel like that's more medicinal than CBD by itself?
Definitely. And which is not to say that CBD alone or THC alone, for that matter, doesn't have medicinal aspects. In fact, both those compounds are approved by the FDA as medicines, as isolated molecules, isolated THC, isolated CBD. You can get them as prescriptions, but really they work better together. And there's many examples of this that are in the literature, but the pharmaceutical world and the medical science establishment is very oriented towards single compounds, single molecules. That's what they're primed to test and work with, and that's what generally gets approved as medicines. Combinations of things are a little trickier, particularly when you have a plant that has hundreds of compounds in it, like cannabis. But one example of how it works better when it's together. There's different examples one can pull from, but there was a very interesting analysis. It's called a meta-analysis, which is a prime type of scientific study. Because a meta-analysis looks at a lot of different studies and puts it all together. And it was an analysis comparing the use of CBD for epilepsy. There is an approved pharmaceutical called Epidiolex, which is basically just pure CBD, a little bit of some funky things they throw in there too, but that's the only cannabinoid. Why they put sucralose in there and ethanol for little kids, I don't know, but that's what's in there. And it is effective. It's gone through tests, and it's shown to be effective for children with otherwise intractable epilepsy. The kids who are getting hundreds of seizures a week, these really, really terrible diseases. And CBD as a pharmaceutical has been shown in tests, and that's why it's been approved by the FDA, to reduce the seizures, sometimes almost completely, but certainly reducing them across the board. Well, there are also these CBD-rich oils. We call them full-spectrum oils, the oil that's pulled from essential oil from the cannabis plant. That's a CBD-rich plant. That's mainly CBD in the oil, but a little bit of THC and a little bit of everything else in the plant. Well, when that's given to a child, it turns out that the amount of CBD necessary to get the effects, and the actual effects are a little bit better than compared to the pharmaceutical, but they're both amazing, the effect, when you consider what it can do for the life of a child that lives in that way. But the amount of CBD you need when it's a full spectrum product is about one-fifth of the amount that's used with Epidiolex when it's pure CBD. So the CBD is potentiated by these other components. And there's, again, many, many examples of this. But that's a good one because it's a real-life example. I wish, really, there'd be more studies that would be funded by the U.S. government to make these comparisons. But they're not so interested in that. But even so, there's not a lot of clinical research going on, unfortunately, with focusing on people, but there's a lot of data on mice. And over again, we see, when you combine CBD and THC and you give it to the mouse scratches less, compared to with just CBD or just THC or whatever they're looking for, an itch or a pain, or they can create disease models for mice and then test what these components do. So I think it's not an overstatement to say that there's no doubt that CBD and THC work better together than individually apart.
Amazing plant. I mean, the more you're talking about it, the more I'm like, holy shit, this plant. It's like we should have been in relationship with it a long time ago.
Well, we were, 5,000 years ago.
Well, yeah. I mean, but maintained it. Yeah, instead of
prohibition when it was imposed in 1937 and the federal level. Yeah, it sundered our relationship from a very important medicinal plant, which was recognized as such in 19th century America. It was widely used in so-called patent medicines and so forth. Cannabis oil was used back then. And the conditions for which it was stated to be useful for very much tally with what we see now. Infantile convulsions was one of the listings from the U.S. dispensatory back in the 1850s. I mean, they knew back then what we're rediscovering now and what the Chinese knew 5,000 years ago. And that's some ways it's comforting. I like the fact that the ancient wisdom is being shown to have merit. And you know, it's being quote unquote proven by modern science. That's somewhat comforting.
Absolutely. I've heard that processing the plant to extract CBD is a difficult process. It's not the easiest thing in the world. Is that true?
There's different ways of doing it, and it depends. It's a matter of scale. If you're talking about, if you're competent, you want to produce, you know, hundreds or thousands of bottles of a tincture, sure, then it's an issue. But otherwise, for a person to do it on their own in their home, you put the take a bud of the plant and put it and soak it in some alcohol, and the alcohol will extract it. You have to leave it in there for a month or so. You could do it yourself. It's not as efficient or easy as you know, buying a product from the store, but at least you know what you're getting if you're doing it.
Right.
Yourself.
And I think in this book, there's instructions for how to create a tincture for yourself.
Yeah. They made a point of including recipes, not just creating a tincture, but creating different edibles, treats and drinks. And I thought that was a really nice addition to the book.
One of the reasons why I wanted to bring that up is because I have heard noise about how the consumer has to be careful about what they're getting, that some CBD products actually don't have much CBD in them at all. And so I wonder if you could speak to that.
It's a problem. It's an unregulated industry. It's been the Wild West. You know, there's people saw dollar signs and really go for it, you know. But there's also very good quality products out there. It's not the easiest thing necessarily to figure out what's what, but not impossible. And there are, you know, certain things that pointers or tips one could that are around to guide people, and they're included in the book. There are a number of different problems. You alluded to the amount of CBD. It might not be significant. It might not match what's in the label. Sometimes it's more than what's said on the label. So that's one obvious thing. If there's a certain amount that's indicated on the label, that's what should be. It should match. There's a little leeway, as it is in industries for these kind of thing, but it shouldn't be all over the map like it is oftentimes for these products. But more disconcerting to me is, you know, what else is in these products besides the CBD? And they're not supposed to have much THC at all. And that's where it can get pretty funky, because there is money involved, and unscrupulous operators will, particularly with the vaping of CBD. Again, there are some good quality vape oils that you can, which could be very helpful, people, because you get a very quick response when you inhale cannabinoids. They take effect almost immediately. So if you're feeling pain or nauseous, that's the way to go. Inhale it. You know? But we don't know necessarily what's in the CBD oils, particularly in the states that don't have medical cannabis. I live in California, and if you go into a dispensary, if you're 21 or older, you can buy products that at least you know that they've been tested for 65 different pesticide residues, for solvent residues, for mold, and that they're considered acceptable levels and unacceptable levels. And if it's unacceptable, it can't be sold in the dispensary. So you at least can have some confidence that you're more likely to get something that's not going to be harmful. Whether it'll be helpful, that's another matter. You know, if you're lucky enough to live in a state, as increasingly now we see states are going in this direction, I think we're up to 16 or 17 now, that have legal cannabis across the board for adults 21 and year older, that's a better situation in terms of buying your CBD products. But many, many states don't have that yet. So one has to be careful. But we would just warn people in terms of the vaping oils in particular, because we had, before COVID, remember, we had another lung catastrophe going on. And it was with illness from vaping. Sometimes in these products, they put all kinds of things to make the oil thicker or thinner, or to give it a little, if it's a so-called THC oil, that's black market, or illicit market, it's unregulated. That's where it can be really problematic, because it's not even THC that's in there. They use what referred to as synthetic cannabinoids, which don't really have anything to do with CBD or THC. They're really strong compounds that scientists developed years ago to trace what happened when they gave it to a mouse. You know, what receptors does it light up and so forth. Well, these things, the formula for these very, very potent synthetic cannabinoids were published in scientific papers. Illicit operators saw these and reproduced them. And they go by names like spice and different things like that. And they're very, very potent. So a person will get high from them, but they can be kind of dangerous. And at Project CBD, we put out a special report on the vaping illness. And we attributed it to these synthetic cannabinoids, which when we looked at the medical science literature about what the impact was on the lungs of these compounds, it was exactly the same what was in the vaping crisis, but the CDC wasn't paying attention. We brought it to their attention. They got sidetracked by COVID. They didn't really follow through ultimately. It's just that there's a lot of strange things in the air. You get an oil where you start with something what they call like propylene glycol, which is a thinning agent. Because CBD oil, THC oil, it has to have a carrier in it. It's in something. Right. So this propylene glycol, it's a thinning agent. Well, then they got to make it thicker. So they put vitamin E acetate to make it thicker, to make it look like it's sort of like an oil, real oil. But it does nothing to a person in terms of psychic, psychological or intoxicating effects. So they spike it with a tiny bit of a synthetic cannabinoid. And you don't need a lot of that because it's really powerful. And this is what these kids are inhaling. And sometimes it really blows their lungs apart. And we're able to confirm from some studies that indeed synthetic cannabinoids were found in some of these vaping in Mississippi and so forth. It was a study. Wow. So the pity is that vaping and inhaling is a very effective means of administering CBD and other cannabinoids. With smoking, it's a bit of a downside. You're inhaling something that's burning. It's not the greatest thing in the world, but cannabis does not cause lung cancer. And there's reasons for that. But it's not necessarily great for the lungs either. So it's a trade-off. If you're feeling really sick and you're double over from nausea, definitely you want to inhale something really quick. You don't want to swallow a gel cap and wait an hour. Fortunately, we do different varieties of ways to administer cannabis and CBD products.
So do you recommend taking a tincture for now? Or
It's a matter of what for. Why is a person wants to take CBD? I take CBD as a supplement, as a gel cap, and it's a good quality product. It's considered a medical cannabis product, but it's almost all CBD, very little THC. So that's something I would take along with my vitamin C and my zinc and the things they said that you should take during COVID.
Right.
Vitamin D is a good one. It's quite interesting when you look at the vitamin D and what it's doing with receptors in the brain and the body and CBD. It's very, very similar. I think they work through similar pathways.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Huh. I sell this product here at the Wellness Center. It's called Healer CBD.
Oh, yeah. That's a good product.
Okay. He came up with some kind of, I can't remember the doctor's name, but he came up with a
Zulock,
cold processing technique. He was able to extract CBDA.
Yeah. On the plant, it's THC and CBD doesn't grow on the plant. It's a THCA and CBDA. It's a slightly different version of the molecule. It's called CBD acid, THC acid. And when you heat that compound, the A falls off and it becomes THCA, which is, by the way, not intoxicating. It becomes THC, which is, and CBDA, when heated, becomes CBD. And CBD and CBDA, similar in some ways and not always the same, in that the CBDA seems to be more potent in certain respects. CBDA is a killer app for anticipatory nausea. There's a certain type of nausea. If you're going through chemotherapy and you've had a few rounds, you've been getting really sick and you're going back, you'll experience intense anticipatory nausea without even being exposed to anything. And it's basically untreatable, except CBDA is amazing for that. More so than even CBD, which is also good for nausea. So yeah, the healer.com is a good product. It's an example of a artisanal tincture. I think there might be in other forms. I think they might have gel caps now.
That's new. Yeah, they did start offering gel caps.
But it's a very, very fine product. But it's not on the Canadian stock market, that company. It's a smaller company.
Yeah.
And they do really, really nice job. And yes, they developed a very unique filtration system, a way of extracting the oil from the plant that retains the full spectrum of the different cannabinoids and other compounds called terpenes, which give the plant its smell. A terpene, you know, there's lots of terpenes. You know them in your life because they're omnipresent. When you walk in a pine forest, you're smelling the piney, that terpene, so forth and so on. Well, there's hundreds of different terpenes. It's actually the most common compound in the botanical world. And I think in cannabis, there might be over 100 that might be, wouldn't be all in one plant, but there might be 20 different terpenes in a given strain or a given cultivar out of maybe a universe of 100, 150 that are possible. And these terpenes also have medicinal components and do add something very specific to the quality of the experience. And this has been, again, charted out by science. And the terpenes, by the way, are all legal. You know, the food-grade terpenes you can buy, you know, as isolates. So, yeah, Healer is a nice product. It's an effective product. I think it's a good one. I don't know, you know, if you have other CBD products, but that's a good choice for a product.
Yeah, I have one other local CBD product that I have here. People seem to really love them. I wanted to shift gears a little bit before we finish our conversation. You're a journalist by trade?
Yes.
So what got you interested in psychedelics? Because I saw a list of the books that you had written.
My first book is called Acid Dreams. It came out in 1986. And it was a social history of, basically a social history of LSD. What got me interested in that is a kind of a funny story, but I was living in Washington, D.C., you know, working with a public interest group. And a lawyer reached out and asked our group if we would examine some documents that the CIA was releasing under the Freedom of Information Act, meaning documents that had once been classified but had been declassified. And they had to do with the CIA's LSD research going back in the 1950s. And I said, sure, that sounds really interesting. So I started reading through these documents, which were quite something. And you know, just got the ball rolling of, well, what was going on in the 1950s that we didn't know about with CIA and LSD, and what did that have to do with happening in the 1960s with all the hippies and the peace movements, and is there a relationship there? Was there something devious there? It turns out it's a much more complex story and more ironic than a devious story, but it's that got me going on that, and it ended up writing a social history, which is a character-driven history. And, you know, just one little connecting point here. It turns out that CBD and LSD bind to the same receptor in the brain. This CBD binds directly to the serotonin receptor. It's called 5-HT2A. It's a serotonin. There's a whole bunch of different serotonin receptor subtypes. But in this one, this is the receptor, serotonin 2A. That's what makes you have a psychedelic trip when LSD binds to it. And what's so curious is that when CBD binds to it, it's the opposite of psychedelic. It's not like it's anti-psychedelic, but it's totally unpsychedelic. It's like so grounding. It's poles apart. And I was very puzzled by this, and I researched this. And I learned about it. It turns out that this gets a little bit sciencey, but a receptor can respond to different, what they call agonists or compound stimuli, and it could cause different things to happen. So when LSD binds to this serotonin receptor, you trip out. You have this fantastic, you know, kaleidoscopic experience, you know, described by Aldous Huxley and so forth. But when CBD binds to that, you don't. And yet down the road, you know, farther along, they do the same thing. It just gets to the same place, but through a different track. Yeah, it comes together. And where they come together in the end is by stimulating neurogenesis and neuroplasticity. CBD, NTHC, and LSD causes the brain to grow new brain cells. I know that sounds astonishing because we were taught LSD, you know, hurts the brain and marijuana hurts the brain. It turns out that's not the case, that it actually stimulates the growth of new brain cells in adults, which happens in a particular area of the brain, the hippocampus, it's called, which is involved with memory and all that. And also neuroplasticity, the ability of a neuron, a brain cell, to respond to a stress, to adapt, to grow a longer roots if need be. You know, this is one of the reasons why psychedelics can have a very profound healing effect, because it actually... changes the way your brain functions or kind of resets it. Well, CBD and THC also does this, have this neurogenic quality of promoting the growth of new brain cells. We talk about it a little bit in the Reader's Digest book, not about LSD, but about CBD's ability to do so, and, you know, cite the government studies that underscore that this is happening.
Brilliant. You know, I feel like I should have probably taken a few college courses before having this conversation with you. So I could have asked better questions, but...
You ask questions, is that it's no complaints.
Well, that's good news.
Hopefully people will find it interesting. That's the point.
Oh, yeah. So, no, I think it is. It's fascinating. And I feel really extra psyched to be talking to someone like you who was at the genesis of this sort of resurgence of interest in the cannabis plant. Project CBD, the website, do you want to talk a little bit about what you have going on there?
Yeah, projectcbd.org is the website. It's a non-commercial website, so it's not cluttered with ads and things like that. What do we have today? I mean, it's International Women's History Month. And March 8th was International Women's Day. So we decided we would do a feature on women medical cannabis patient activists who are involved in efforts to change the law. So it's a really nice story, with a profile of women from the UK, Peru, Spain, and the US, talking about their lives and the suffering and what they've dealt with and how cannabis in general, and sometimes CBD in particular, was transformed their life and turned them into passionate advocates for changing the law and making these remedies available for people in general. So that's what we focused on now. But it really is, sometimes we hone in on a specific condition. We look at the latest science. We do track the science every week. There's almost 100 new science papers published, peer-reviewed from around the world, that deal with cannabis or CBD in one form or another. And just to kind of monitor that information, pick out something that's really significant. But also we do look at, again, the social dimensions of all this. So we've done, we did a five-part series on hemp and Native American sovereignty, what's going on with Native American tribes that are embracing hemp as an important plant, growing it and trying to jumpstart their economies through the plant. And of course, Indian law is not the same as federal law.
Right.
So there's sort of interesting conflicts that have been happening there, interesting opportunities in that regard. So we look at that. I think we just heard today Mexico is legalized officially, marijuana, and that's big. So we'll do a story about that.
It just happened?
Yeah. I mean, it's been a process that finally they tied the ribbon on this thing. It was just announced. I guess it was yesterday.
Wow. Okay.
It's been today. So that's significant. I mean, marijuana for Mexico. I mean, it's pretty obvious that that's a big story in terms of the international.
I would think so. Yeah.
So it really kind of a variety of things. And we look at the different dimensions of healing. And we'll do focusing on the science about the endocannabinoid system more so than the plant. Did a really interesting story on how bears are able to hibernate and why, it was always puzzling to me as a kid. How do animals hibernate? How do they sleep like for 5 days?
Yeah, right.
Well, it turns out it's all about the endocannabinoid system, how things change within their endocannabinoid system that allows them to do that. And they have their endocannabinoid system functions differently as mammals as compared to us. And so we'll do it. I just thought that's interesting. So we would do a story on that. So it really, whatever, there is an embarrassment of riches in terms of interesting things to write about, to comment about.
Beautiful. So it's a resource website, really.
It's an educational website. I urge people to, if they're interested in CBD, that's definitely the place to go more than anywhere.
Wonderful. I will put a link in the show notes to that website.
Great. We appreciate it.
And also to the book.
Absolutely. I think the book's going to be a very important tool in terms of helping people navigate the CBD world, which is a bit confusing.
It is.
Also, minds about all what's happening about cannabis in general.
No, it's a really nice book. It's really well put together and it's thorough and it's accessible.
That's what we want.
Yeah, exactly. So good job steering that ship.
it turned out well.
Yeah. Thank you so much. This has been a really important conversation. And I'm really psyched that you were able to come on and chat with me.
Well, it's much appreciated. You know, this is the first podcast I've done for the book.
Oh, no kidding. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.
There's a lot to digest there. You can purchase a copy of The Essential Guide to CBD directly from the Reader's Digest website, rd.com, or at any online retailer. I also highly recommend visiting projectcbd.org, an incredible resource for all things cannabis and CBD. And for the local folks, if you're interested in trying Healer CBD or CBDA, I have trial and full-size vials of whole plant hemp drops here at Lucid Path Wellness. Thank you again to Martin Lee for coming on the show, and thank you for listening. Got a couple more really great episodes to finish off season 3 coming your way, so stay tuned. Until next time.